They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, this is Sue Bartholomew, and it is my distinct honor and privilege to welcome back Dr. Bonner Cohen to the show. Dr. Cohen is a senior policy advisor with the Heartland Institute. He's a senior policy analyst with the Committee for Conservative Tomorrow and an adjunct scholar at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's an author, and he's an all-around nice guy, but unfortunately, he doesn't have a very nice message today. Welcome, and thank you for joining us today, Bonner.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and you're absolutely right. I've got really bad news.
Yeah, you do. I'm going to shut up, and I'm going to let you tell us about it.
Okay, with precious little fanfare, and there are very compelling political reasons why there was such little fanfare, the Obama administration, a few weeks back, unveiled a plan put together at the Department of HUD, the Department of Urban Affairs, Health and Urban Affairs. And this regulation, it's currently in its proposed stage, is something called Affirmatively Furthering
Fair Housing.
And what it is a very far-reaching scheme designed to completely transform political boundaries in this country, political boundaries that historically have separated urban from suburban areas from one another. And what it does is it grants an enormous amount of power to bureaucrats at HUD, Housing and Urban Development, to develop and enforce a complete transformation of traditional housing patterns in the United States. And it has three key elements to them. One, it will inhibit suburban growth and, when possible, encourage suburban remigration to cities. That word encourage, by the way, we should put into quotation marks because in some respects it will practically force suburban remigration to cities. The second element is it will force the urban poor into suburbs through the imposition of low-income housing quotas. Those low-income housing quotas will be imposed on suburban jurisdictions throughout the country. They will be forced to construct high-density, low-income housing, and they will be forced to accept migrants from the inner cities into their neighborhoods in suburban areas. The third institute, the third leg of this, will be regional tax-based sharing, where a state forces upper-middle-class suburbs to transfer tax revenue to nearby cities and less well-off inner rings. Now you ask yourself, well, how in the world can they do this? Well, practically every jurisdiction in the United States, in one form or another, receives money from HUD. And if you receive money from HUD for whatever housing program you may have in your jurisdiction, you come under the jurisdiction of HUD. And HUD is going to require, under this proposed rule, all jurisdictions to fill out a questionnaire explaining, first of all, outlining their demographic, racial, ethnic, and income-related composition of their communities. That information will then be compared with similar information gathered from surrounding suburbs, but also nearby cities. And where disparities, which is an interesting word, exist, that is, you have wealthier white people living in a suburb, and you have poorer African Americans living in an inner city, then those disparities must be, in the spirit of the proposed regulation, affirmatively addressed, meaning that they will be eviscerated. That will lead then to the transfer of transfers of people going in two directions. First of all, as we said earlier, opening up housing by forcing suburbs to construct high-density, low-income housing, and then moving people from the cities into those neighborhoods to encourage wealthier, predominantly white people in suburbs to move into the cities. You jiggle the transportation funds in such a way that you promote public transportation, meaning buses, rail, light rail, and what have you, at the expense of the construction of highways and roads, with the result that you make it increasingly difficult for people to use their automobiles and get from point A to point B. Why not just throw in the towel, move into the cities where you will have public transportation at your disposal? Meanwhile, the way that the rule is set up, and this is, I think, also very important for our listeners to understand, there will be a transfer not just of people, but also of money. And that money will be transferred from the coffers, the tax coffers, of the suburbs into the cities to address the disparities that exist between the two. So what you have here is a scheme for the de facto, if not necessarily de jure, annexation of suburbs by cities, all to be overseen by regional commissions, many of which, by the way, already exist, though they're relatively benign now compared to what they would be in the future. And those regional commissions operating under instructions or guidelines put to it by HUD will then enforce and make sure that everything we have briefly outlined here, all of these transfers of both people and taxpayers' money, are carried out. The important thing for people to understand is the suburbs here have absolutely no choice but to go along with this. They are taking Caesar's silver, and they've been taking it for a long time, in the form of whatever HUD money has come into their suburban districts, however small in some cases it may have been. And because they are on the receiving end of HUD's largesse, HUD puts itself in the position of telling them how to handle their housing problems. So that, in a nutshell, is what we are looking at. It is a radical break with the way we have handled our housing conditions in this country, not just since its founding in 1776, but going back even before that to the colonial period. It will be a complete amalgamation of cities and suburbs brought to you by the federal government, imposed on governments. if you look at a map, if this thing goes into effect, if you look at a map, nothing will have changed. That is, the suburbs will still be there. There will still be a Falls Church or a Fairfax City or a Leesburg or what have you. However, the governments running those various entities will have been effectively neutered, because they will be nothing more but recipients of instructions emanating from Washington, D.C., in many cases passed through regional commissions that will be set up to help enforce this. So what you will have here is, as I said earlier, de facto annexation of suburbs throughout the United States by larger cities to which they are located. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what the Obama administration housing activists drawn from the far left of the political spectrum. This is what these people have been toiling away and very quietly putting together ever since Obama came to power in early 2009. Now, you haven't heard a great deal about this. Usually when the government comes up with a far-reaching program, there's a big press conference, there are people who come and speak, there's a giant dog and pony show. Not so with this one, and with good reason, because they don't really want to let the cat out of the bag. There's an election coming up in 2016. This could prove to be a very explosive issue. So better just to say, well, this is just a rulemaking that's underway at an agency, quite frankly, most Americans have never heard of, or if they've heard of it, they don't really know what it does, namely HUD. And it's relatively benign, and don't worry, nobody is going to interfere with the way suburban governments operate. No one is going to change the way that we do housing. Well, don't believe a word of it. Instead, go read the regulation. And the regulation is remarkably clear about what this is and where it's going. You won't hear that from any Obama administration official publicly, because they don't want to draw too much attention to this.
Bonner, let me ask you something. I'm sitting here listening to you. I'm flabbergasted. And the one thing that comes to mind is, all right, we're talking about money. We're talking about local municipal governments. We're talking about taking away their power. I'm no great fan of government, so strip them of their power. Perfect. That includes the federal government. But what I'm hearing is that it's the individuals, regardless of what color, what their race is, that is being shunted. They're being shunted around like a herd of cattle.
Oh, yeah. It actually it reminds me of some of the language that described apartheid South Africa, when there was a term called resettlement. And under resettlement, under the old apartheid government, blacks and coloreds were sometimes removed from certain areas and put in others. Well, oddly, that it's a variation on that theme that we're looking at here. Blacks, predominantly inner city blacks, but this could also include Hispanics, Asians, will be forcibly resettled from the inner cities to suburbia. Whether they want to live there or not is none of their business. They're going to go there, because that, in the eyes of a housing advocate and activist, removes a disparity that exists between the races, and they want to eviscerate as many of those as they can. Similarly, although somewhat more subtly, whites will be encouraged to move in the city simply by making it more difficult for them to live in the suburbs. And if, of course, the suburbs, say you're living right across the street, boom, affordable housing goes up, which is now a more polite term for public housing, but sometimes that's a distinction without a difference, with the crime and the social perversion which those things invariably bring with them, those whites will, in fact, up and leave. Some of them will go into cities which, to a certain extent, have been depopulated of its lower class, because the lower class, the underclass in this case, the underclass will have been moved in large part from the cities to the suburbs. Then you will see, and this is absolutely part of what they want to happen, they want then the whites to relocate from the suburbs to the inner cities, where, of course, they will take on the political habits of urban dwellers, which will benefit one of the two major parties, namely the Democrats, which is, in essence, one of the many things this is all about. All of this will be done more or less at the point of a gun. And by that, I mean you don't have any say in this. This is going to happen if the rule goes into effect. And remember, every rule and regulation imposed by a federal agency, whether it's HUD or EPA or what have you, has the force of law behind it. Please note that the Congress of the United States had nothing to do with this. I'm not letting them off the hook, on the contrary. But this is being done administratively. Because, quite frankly, the Obama administration knows that Congress would never enact such a monstrosity. So instead, just as it is doing to address, quote-unquote, climate change, through administrative law by the Environmental Protection Agency, the same agency that's responsible for the horrific pollution of rivers in southern Oregon and northern New Mexico, which is another but related subject, This is being done administratively by unelected and unaccountable bureaucrats, but they will have the force of law behind them. Suburban governments will have absolutely no choice whatsoever but to go along with this.
So you're saying that it's not actually the law yet?
Not yet. No, it's just a proposal now. It's a proposed regulation.
It's a proposed regulation. So what can we do to prevent this from going through? Because, Bonner, as I said, I'm sort of listening to this and I'm thinking more of the people. I do know that in the past there's been some means of trying to force people to live together in certain neighborhoods. The problem is most people want to live with their own kind.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Because, you know, if you don't speak English and you're going to your next-door neighbor to borrow a cup of sugar, you cannot do that because you have no way of communicating. People like to be able to celebrate their holidays and traditions together.
Right.
Instead of being shunted around and split and sent all over the place.
You're exactly right. And that gives you an idea of the mentality behind all of this. Whether people individually or as members of certain ethnic or, for that matter, religious groups, whether they really want to participate in this is a matter of absolutely no concern to the bureaucrats and political appointees of the Obama administration who dreamed this scheme up. They must comply. So if blacks are happier living where they are, they would probably like to have a higher income, but if they're happy being with their own kind, that's too bad, because if this thing is allowed to go into effect, then they will be uprooted. Their apartments will either be completely torn down. If they're living in public housing, they'll be leveled. New housing will go up, and it's the hope of the people that the new housing that goes up, which will be more upscale, will take care of the white people who will be forced out of the suburbs, forced into the cities, while the blacks replace them by moving into the suburbs. That's the kind of mentality we're looking at here.
We're not going to bother asking the people what they want, right?
Oh, no. The people have nothing to do with this. It's completely in the scheme of progressivism that there is a small elite of experts. Experts in this particular case, housing, just as they're experts in environment, energy, health, and what have you. And it is these people who are deciding how we are going to live our lives, in which neighborhoods we will be living, who will be our neighbors. In other words, we don't choose our own neighbors and our own neighborhoods anymore. HUD chooses that for us.
I agree with no discrimination. I agree with fair housing. I don't think that a realtor should be deciding where you should live and only show you things that they think you need to fit into. I think that if you want to move into a certain neighborhood and you can afford it,
right,
then, you know, I totally support fair housing, because I've seen some real horrible stories come out where people have been harassed, abused, discriminated against, just bounced around. And I don't support that in the least. But I do support an individual's right, because I think it is a right, to live where they want. And this is just, it's just horrible.
That's right. And that right, and I agree with you, I think that right does exist. That right will be no more if this thing is allowed to go into effect. You will be surrendering your right to choose where you want to live, and you will be surrendering that right to a federal bureaucracy, which will tell you, say in the finest tradition of the old East Germany, the Soviet Union, you pick your police state, and which is really where this is headed. Not that they're going to be guys standing around with guns forcing you from one to the other. They don't have to do that, because there are more subtle ways of getting you to do what they want you to do. But in the end, you will have no choice but to comply with the scheme that HUD has developed.
It's like you said, they're holding a gun to your head. They take your money, because you earn it in the form of taxes. They take it and they run it through the federal bureaucracy, and then they hold it over your head, and they hold a gun to your head again.
That's right. Remember, they thought of everything on this. For instance, the transfer of taxpayer money from a suburban government to the local urban government. What that will do is deplete the coffers of the suburban government, making it no longer capable of delivering the services, water, fire protection, things like that, paving streets, fixing sewers, all that stuff. They will no longer be able to do that, which, of course, will make the suburban area a much less desirable place to live. That money being transferred to the city, this is another way of subtly, and in many respects not so subtly, forcing people out of the suburbs and into cities, because where else are they going to live unless they decide to head for the hills and move even further out? And believe me, HUD will come up with a way to get them too, but that, of course, will make for an even longer commute, and the people may ultimately decide that the lesser of the two evils is to sell their suburban home, probably at a huge loss, by the way, because it will no longer be coveted by anybody. So sell their home for a huge loss and buy a condo or a townhouse or some other a dwelling in the city, where it probably at a very, very high price, because just go around and look at what these what is being charged for homes in gentrified areas of Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia and any place else. And so you're looking at two things here. You're looking at, first of all, depriving suburbs of the tax money, because your tax money is going to pay for this if you live in the suburbs, both at the federal level, particularly the local level, because the local tax money that traditionally has gone to your government, your suburban government, that suburban government must transfer a certain percentage of those revenues to the local city government, thereby, as I said earlier, depleting the coffers of the suburban government, making it less capable of delivering the services that it traditionally has done.
You know, Banner, we've had, on this show, we've discussed this a lot, but the suburbs, the suburban jurisdictions have dumped their responsibilities onto the private sector through homeowner associations.
That's right.
They don't maintain any infrastructure. The streets are in associations, the association. So essentially, we're being double taxed to take care of all of the infrastructure in our neighborhoods. So all the money that's going is a form of double taxation. And now it sounds terrible.
Right. Now, I'm sure our listeners would want to know, where do we go from here? The first thing I think that's vitally important for all of us to do is to get the message out on this and to let Congress know that what an absolute obscenity this thing is and how disastrous it's going to be for everybody, uprooting people, moving them from one jurisdiction to another, whether they want to make that move or not, and effectively eviscerating boundaries and governments that in some cases have been around for 300, 350 years, that they will all go. So what do you do? All right. First of all, let Congress know that this is terrible. What can happen here during the rulemaking process? And these things drag on. The rules were just released earlier this summer in the form of a regulatory proposal. There are public comments being taken on this now. Which, of course, is a mere formality. Anybody who thinks HUD takes your comments seriously is living on Mars or some other place. But Congress can withhold funds through the appropriations process from HUD to carry out this this plan. Now, all sorts of lawsuits will, I'm sure, also be filed, but I personally have zero faith in U.S. judicial system.
Yeah.
that have a long and well-documented history of giving a lot of discretionary latitude to federal agencies. And so, yes, go ahead and file the lawsuits. The lawyers can pocket the cash, and that's good for them. But I doubt very seriously if much of anything is going to be overturned. The proper way to deal with this during the time that Obama is in office is to withhold funds from HUD to carry this out. Obama will, of course, veto that, and that's going to set up a confrontation on Capitol Hill. That will probably last for the remaining roughly year and a half or a little bit less of the Obama administration. The other way that this could be done away with, of course, would be through a new administration taking office in January 2017. The thing that the monstrosity that I have described this afternoon is being done administratively, not legislatively. That means it can also be undone administratively. The rule can simply be withdrawn. So we need to make it imperative for whoever the next president is, provided it's not Hillary Rodham Clinton, because she will go along with this probably, but whoever it is, if it's someone other than her or somebody who favors this, to have HUD withdraw the thing is shortly after X takes office in January 2017. We can't get into that now because we have absolutely no idea who that's going to be. But those are the two options. In the interim, withhold funds from HUD to carry this out, and a long term, but it's not that long now, it's less than a year and a half, hope that a new president, whoever that is, withdraws this obscenity.
How can we make this a campaign issue? Because that's what it's going to take.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it's going to take. And regardless of who your preferences are in this, get in touch with your candidate and bring this issue to the candidate's attention. By the way, don't just do that at the presidential level. Do that at the state and everywhere. Make everybody aware of this. And if you have a particularly good relationship with Senator X or Congressman Y or presidential candidate Z, or you know somebody who has, in all likelihood, these people have never heard of this thing. So get informed about this. There is an excellent article on this that appeared in National Review a few weeks ago. And let me scroll up on my computer here and give everybody, because it's still online, and here it is. Okay. It's National Review. Attention, America suburbs. You have just been annexed. That is the title of the article. And the author of the article is Stanley, S-T-A-N-L-E-Y, Kurtz, K-U-R-T-Z. And the article was published July 20th, 2015. It is online now. Google what I just read out. Get that article, send it to your friends, send it to whatever political contacts you have, because what it's going to take is a grassroots effort to bring this down. Nothing short of that will work.
I will have a link to the article in my promo. I will have it on my website. So if you're on my mailing list, you will have a link. If you go to my website, you will be able to download it. If you are listening, solely listening, and do not get any of that stuff, you can join my mailing list just by clicking on the box. Go to onthecommons.net, join the mailing list. You will get no more than one, I promise you, no more than one promo a week from me. But check my website if you want to. If you're just listening, go to onthecommons.us or onthecommons.net and click on that link and read it, because it is your home that is in jeopardy. It is your assets that are being further monkeyed around with.
Yeah, it's your home, it's your assets, it's your livelihood, and it's your liberty. Because what you have here are federal bureaucrats telling you where you can and cannot live. And if you happen to be living where they don't think you should be living, they have plans for you. And those plans are to move you and your family where they think you should live. That is the crux of all of this, that decisions that historically we have made for ourselves based on our ability to pay for this house or that apartment or that condo or what have you, after having spent however number of years working and accumulating wealth or not accumulating wealth, as the case may be, those decisions that we have historically made for ourselves will from now on be made, if this thing is allowed to go into effect, will be made by someone else. And the transformation of our jurisdictions as a result of this will be absolutely catastrophic.
We're talking to Dr. Bonner Cohen, and we're talking about a new regulation that hopefully will die a natural death before it ruins everything that you have ever worked for or dreamed of. Bonner, this is, thank you. You've done an excellent job of explaining it and putting it in language that is easy to understand. Other than contacting your legislators and contacting, and I really think it ought to be a campaign issue.
Oh, I agree completely. And I said campaign issue at all levels. The presidential campaign, next year is an election year. Here in Virginia, we have elections coming up this fall for the General Assembly. It should be an issue there, simply because you have to build a groundswell of opposition to this. And that means you not only deal with the top, you deal with the bottom. You deal with all levels. Unless politicians sense outrage, they don't do a thing. They're not going to rock the boat. And just to anticipate one of the arguments that you're going to encounter, that if you say you don't like this, you're going to be called a racist. And let's be real open about that, because that's exactly what's going to come.
Oh, yeah.
So be prepared to deal with that, because the minute you speak out against this, rather than argue the facts, rather than debate you, they're simply going to engage in name-calling. If your skin is too thin for that, then believe me, stay at home. Get shoes, emails, and send them out, but don't go out. But if you're going to go out into the public arena, believe me, the other side is not going to roll over and play dead. The other side is going to attack. It is going to attack you viciously. It is going to attack you personally. And I can assure you that one of the first words out of the other side's mouth will be racist. So be prepared for it.
You know, Bonner, they can call me a racist, but I have a history of working with just about everyone from every religion to every color to every nationality to every life choice, whatever the issue is. If it's a problem and they've come to me, I have helped them regardless of who they are, and I will always do that. I think that this nonsense about just accusing everyone of being a accusing whites of being a racist is just ridiculous.
It's ridiculous for another reason, too. One of my favorite commentators on television is a gentleman from New York City by the name of Charles Payne. He's on Fox Business Channel. And he was a guy who was born in a dead-end neighborhood in Harlem. Street gangs all around him, drug dealers, crime, all the social perversion that the nation's underclass has to offer. And he's a very smart guy. And he said, you know, I want to get out of this. Now, of course, he had the choice of becoming a drug dealer or a bank robber or what have you. Instead, he got interested in money, not stealing it or what have you, but making it in Wall Street. And he became an investor. And he's now a one-man conglomerate, with his own investment company and his own TV show. And he will tell you, when he was a young man looking around at the deplorable conditions around him, he said to himself, I want out of this. I don't want to wind up being dead at 29 in a gangland shooting or drive-by shooting or what have you. So he worked hard, saved his money, and presumably lives in a very nice neighborhood somewhere now. Do you really think that he wants the worst elements of the underclass as a result of this HUD regulation to move in across the street from him? He spent his whole life trying to get away from it, and now the very thing he tried to get away from, is coming to a neighborhood near him, perhaps right across the street. He doesn't want this. So what incentive are we giving minorities who try to better their lives so that they can live in safer places and raise their children to be something other than prostitutes and drug dealers? They play by the rules, get out of the neighborhood, and bingo, the neighborhood comes to them.
You know, there are two points that I want to make and two questions, basically. Are you aware of the mainstream media covering any of this?
Yes, and it's practically zero. And simply, they're gonna, and believe me, as the old Bolsheviks said, that's no coincidence, because they're not going to go near this for obvious reasons. They want this thing swept under the rug as much as possible because they know it's politically explosive. If you look at how volatile things are in the political arena now, where establishment types on both the left and the right are finding it hard. They're being, you have Donald Trump and you have Bernie Sanders. So the things are being turned upside down. The last thing they want to add to this volatile mix is a widespread understanding of what Obama has proposed here. So believe me, they're going to sweep it under the rug. And frankly, not even Fox News has done a particularly good job of this. And I've seen a couple of their reports on this, and it really wasn't very good. They still don't quite get what Stanley Kurtz in National Review has understood and written so beautifully in the article that we referenced.
Why would the media, isn't it their responsibility, their job, to expose this, to report on this stuff?
On paper it is, but as I think many of us know, the media are in cahoots with, in large part, with the ruling class, with the powers that be. They're, ABC, CBS, NBC are virtually indistinguishable, and there are fewer good reporters on each one of those, but they're the exception and not the rule. The prevailing mentality there is if the Obama administration proposed it, it is a priori good. That being the case, let's not stir the pot. If we are, in fact, forced to report on this one way or another, I can guarantee you that after briefly describing what HUD has they will somehow slant the story in such a way that people who object to this are
racist.
There you
racist.
Go. All right.
Racist.
So, for instance, I subscribe to the Washington Post. I get it at my doorstep every day. I've seen no article on this. Doesn't mean there wasn't one, but I can assure you it was well hidden. Washington Times, by contrast, has had a couple of very good pieces on this. So the establishment media, the mainstream media, are staying away from this because it's politically volatile and could ultimately harm their interest and their political preferences, so they're not going to do it.
Well, that's a rotten shame. Going back to why are we not educating these kids? Why are we not going into the slums and providing them with, I mean, wouldn't the federal government be better off putting the money into cleaning up those neighborhoods rather than
Of course, the federal government, beginning with the Great Society in the mid-1960s, has poured enormous resources into the war on poverty and other schemes ostensibly designed to improve the lives of those at the bottom of the economic ladder. What they've actually done, of course, is perpetuate them because they've gotten the lower classes, turned those lower classes into underclasses, which are largely and in some cases completely dependent on the federal government for their livelihoods in the form of various welfare schemes, family assistance programs, and what have you. It turns out, of course, that this is very much in the interest of certain people, because having a large, ignorant underclass, and I say ignorant, and by that I mean this, the kids who live in this country's worst urban neighborhoods go to schools which are absolutely atrocious, and they are atrocious by design. Why have good schools that educate kids, that will get kids to think critically about the deplorable conditions in which many of them grow up? Female-headed households with seven kids, with fathered by five different men. We all know where that goes. If you don't believe me, go visit a public housing project and you can see it. Look at the crime rates, which are sadly again soaring under Obama. But you have to understand that certain segments of the American ruling class are quite pleased with that. First of all, it's for the time being anyway, until this HUD thing came along, they're not directly affected by it because they live in relatively secure neighborhoods far away. But the underclass, it provides relatively secure votes for them when elections come around, because you can go back and
so it's political.
It's purely political. I mean, they have an interest in perpetuating the very conditions that most of us would find deplorable, because those people can be relied on to provide votes when elections come up. So they actually have abandoned any thought of climbing up the social ladder and improving one's livelihoods. That's not in their interest at all, but rather keep those people poor, keep them dependent. One of the ways you do that is to make sure that the schools are abysmal, which they are, and make them think that they are victims, which as a matter of fact they are, but they're not victims of racism. They're victims of federal policies specifically designed to keep them exactly where they are.
Wow. I would have thought instead of forcing them to move out, or maybe that's what the whole plan... It seems to me there's a lot more to this than is obvious on the surface. At first glance, it goes deeper and deeper, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And you're dealing with several different phenomena here at one time. The whole notion of forcing equality. Truth of the matter is, you can't even force equality. All of us are unequal. Some of us are better at certain things than others. Some of us are luckier than others. Life is inherently unfair. Well, certain people can't deal with that. So they want more or less equality of outcome, or at least they claim they do. In reality, of course, they don't. But if they're caught up in that that mindset, and they're in a position of power, such as the aforementioned bureaucrats at HUD, then they are going to develop policies with which they are comfortable and which at least ostensibly address the problem of inequality by forcing equality. Of course, in the end, they're not changing anything because the inequality is invariably going to exist. We have all known people in our lives who are highly intelligent and completely dysfunctional. We've all known people like that.
Yeah.
We've all known people who started out life with every advantage in the world and made absolutely nothing of it, or were just underachievers. You can't force this. You can try to provide as many opportunities as you can, irrespective of a person's race, national origin, ethnicity, or what have you. Then it's up to that person to give it a shot and see what happens. Sometimes things are going to work out, and sometimes they're not. And if they don't, I'm sorry, but that's just the way life is. Here, so you have, you know, the obsession with equality on the one hand, you have people drunk with power on another. Because after all, a bureaucrat at HUD, or political appointee at HUD, making about $150,000 a year, something like that, may not be making nearly as much money as, say, Donald Trump, but that bureaucrat has a tremendous amount of power, and that bureaucrat is throwing his or her weight around. You have that element of it. Then you have the element of it that I mentioned earlier, which is actually understood by a relatively small percentage of the Saul Alinsky-trained elements of the current administration, in that this is all about creating a playing field that will perpetuate the leftist ruling class of the country, keep it in power, and lessen the power of those who dare to stand in the way and say, well, no, because their ultimate goal is a complete transformation, as Obama, in a rare moment of honesty, said shortly before he was sworn in, you know, the complete transformation of America. This is a part of that. This is a major part of that. I would say this is probably the boldest part of that. That is why, and it is so bold, in fact, that you haven't heard about it. Because they don't dare let this cat get out of the bag and people understand what game is really being played here.
America has traditionally, or Americans overseas have traditionally, announced that they are the biggest, the richest, the most powerful, the wisest, the best, you know, all of these superlatives. But what we're doing is undermining all of that. If there was a time when we truly were the strongest, the richest, the all of that, we sort of are in the process of just dismantling.
Oh yeah, this is largely self-destructive. It's been going on for decades, accelerated by Obama because he's actually doing it on purpose, whereas some of his predecessors did it out of sheer ineptitude. They didn't really know what they were doing. They bit off more than they chewed. They got involved in foreign military adventures without giving proper thought to the unintended consequences thereof. They didn't mind the store here to the extent that they should have, and allowed very incrementally our rights to be undermined in a whole range of areas. They allowed the administrative regulatory state in Washington to grow and extend its power. Obama, of course, inherited all of that 6.5 years ago, and as someone who understands the use of power very well, he realized what, in the form of the regulatory administrative state, he realized what he had and what he could do with it. So if you can't get something through Congress, don't worry. You can get a regulatory agency to do more or less the same thing. And that's really what's going on now. So unless we address the problem thoroughly of dismantling the administrative regulatory state, give you an example, I would completely abolish the Environmental Protection Agency, which is an utter monstrosity, devolve all of its powers to the 50 states, each one of which has an environmental agency. You don't need an EPA. It is a bureaucracy with 17,000 full-time employees, which is monumentally corrupt. Corrupt in ways that it would take numerous segments of this program to go into. It's corruption of science. It's corruption of passing out government money to favored political groups on the outside. It's a whole range of ways in which EPA is corrupt. But, of course, we vested too much power in EPA, and if you don't want power abused, don't give it in the first place. But, unfortunately, Congress has been negligent for decades and has allowed this state within a state that is EPA to become an agency, to become what is de facto the most powerful regulatory agency in the country. HUD is now following in EPA's footsteps with the program that we have talked about this afternoon. It, too, is throwing its weight around in a manner that would have been absolutely unthinkable just a few years ago, yet is perfectly logical, but is actually a perfectly logical extension of what EPA has been doing for decades. It's just being done in another area. No legislation, everything done administratively under existing law.
The EPA has been around for a long time, right?
1970. Right.
So it's not that long, really.
No, no, it's created by one Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Oh, wonderful.
Which, in my view, was a far bigger mistake than Watergate. It was a far bigger disaster, as the late Stan Evans once said, after he created EPA and imposed price and wage controls and created a whole bunch of other agencies. You know, Watergate was like a breath of fresh air. and I can't help but agree with him.
So what we're seeing is government growing and getting more bloated and more intrusive and more expensive. Whatever happened to the notion that he governs best who governs least?
Well, that's been sadly overtaken by the very incremental growth of the state. You can date it, if you wish, from the New Deal, but actually, if you turn back to the New Deal, it was even at the end of Roosevelt's administration, at the when he died in 1945, the regulatory state was actually very small. We put certain things in place then. But over the years, we have built upon it, probably most dramatically under Johnson's Great Society in the 1960s. But as I mentioned, Nixon gave the country EPA, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and other monstrosities. And over time, those agencies came to realize how much power they had, and surprise, surprise, they used it. And if you have, in the case of EPA, if you have an agency that's corrupt to begin with, that's institutionally arrogant, and then you have an administration such as the current one, which sends political appointees to EPA, drawn from some of the most radical environmental groups in the country, all of which, by the way, are extremely well-funded, then you have a recipe for absolute disaster. Joe and Jane Sixpack, sitting out wherever they are, whether they're in Virginia or Kansas or New Mexico or whatever, have no clue, for the most part, what these agencies are up to and how they operate, because they live in a world unto themselves. However, they have enormous power over far-flung areas of this country, and that power is exercised from right here in Washington, D.C., and this is the monstrosity that we have allowed to come into being, and it is completely at odds with the traditions of the country. The thing that Obama has contributed most to this is that he knows that, and he is purposely pursuing this. As I said, the rest of the people, the only excuse you could probably give them is, forgive them, Lord, they know not what they are doing. In other words, they stood there and let this happen, whereas Obama is not standing there and letting it happen. He understands the power of the regulatory state. He understands the power that we invested in bureaucracies, and he is using that power in ways which are designed to completely transform the country, and he is succeeding in doing that.
Bonner, thank you so very much for coming on. Thank you for explaining all of this. Guys, listen to him, listen very carefully, and try to do something about it. I hope you'll come back again.
Okay, I would love to. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bonner.
Bye.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.